This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
Tevye Troy is a best-selling presidential historian and a frequent television radio analyst. I loved his book, Shall We Wake the President? A History of Presidents Dealing with Disasters. And his new book, which is really, really interesting, called Fight House. And it's rivalries in the White House from Truman to Trump. Tevye, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you back. Congratulations on this book. I love the cover. I love the whole idea that, you know, White House rivalries did not start with the Trump administration. You would think so, of course, if you paid attention to the news.
No, it's actually been going on for a long time. And obviously, since the beginning of the Republic, we've had rivalries in administrations. But I start with Truman because I start with the beginning of the White House staff. And once you have the White House staff, you started to have all kinds of new tension between the White House staff and the cabinet. And once the White House staff became famous, they were supposed to be determined with a passion for anonymity, but that anonymity went out the door real fast. And once they became famous, they also started to compete for attention and jobs and press leaks and all that stuff. So it makes for a really toxic and fun mix.
Now, I mean, I've worked on presidential campaigns, and I've seen some of that firsthand in terms of everybody is trying to get as close as possible to the candidate or as close as possible to the president, and they backstab each other and they'll do all that. But you would think, though, for example, none of that took place in Kennedy's administration, right? Camelot, everybody was happy. Everybody was thrilled to be there.
Yeah, well, look, the whole idea of Camelot didn't even come around until after Kennedy was dead. So that was kind of a new development after Kennedy's untimely passing. But there was definitely fighting in the Kennedy administration. Robert F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, the attorney general and the vice president, were at each other's throats and hated each other. And one thing I mentioned in the book is those are the two people that the administration couldn't fire, one because he was the president's brother and the other one because he was the vice president. So there was all kinds of nasty fighting in that administration, but also at lower levels. Arthur Schlesinger had a rivalry with Ted Sorensen that I talk about in the book that not only existed in the White House, but went on after the White House when they were competing to get their books about Kennedy out first. And they were trying to outmaneuver the other and see who would get their book out first.
Fight House is the name of the book, and this is terrific. And it starts with Truman. So you mentioned that was the rise of the White House staff. So what was different about that administration versus the ones before it?
So in the 1930s, there was a commission called the Brownlow Commission. The Brownlow Commission looked at all the roles and responsibilities that were falling on the president, and it determined a famous four-word conclusion: the president needs help. And it said that there should be this development of a White House staff and that these aides should have, as I mentioned earlier, a passion for anonymity. And it started under Roosevelt, but Truman was the first president to enter with a White House staff. So the White House staff didn't exist before the beginning of the Roosevelt administration. It developed mid-Roosevelt. And so Truman is the first president to enter with a White House staff. And we already start to see there tensions between, for example, Clark Clifford, who was at the time a young junior but very talented White House aide, who was advocating for the recognition of Israel, and George Marshall, who was the Secretary of State, who was against the recognition of Israel. Sounds crazy today because America is such a close ally of Israel. But they had this bitter fight about it in the Oval Office. And Marshall, the Secretary of State, lost the fight, was so angry that he never again spoke to Clifford or mentioned his name for the rest of his life. How's that for bitterness?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, that's what I would imagine some of the bitterness. I mean, I remember when Steve Bannon left the White House and the president called him Sloppy Steve. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of these feelings when these people depart, I think of George Stephanopoulos leaving the Clinton administration, there can't be good feelings left over. I would think a lot of that would boil over for a long time to come.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned Stephanopoulos, because Stephanopoulos goes on to become a media person, as we now know him today. And the White House is unhappy with some of the things he says. They used to call him ABC News common traitor instead of commentator, common traitor, George Stephanopoulos. So, you mentioned Sloppy Steve. One of the things that I have in Fight House is just a compilation of the greatest nicknames in White House history. I'm not going to ruin all of them here, but you get Fight House, you'll get a lot of amazing White House nicknames.
And you mentioned it in the book, and I was reading about the gender divide within the Obama administration, because they always called them, you know, no drama Obama, right? That was how the media referred to him all the time.
Yeah, and it was a very conscious strategy by Obama to put out this idea that we're going to be different from every previous Democratic campaign, every previous Democratic administration, which are always beset by infighting. So they put out this notion that there was very little fighting in the Obama White House. And I will say this, there was less of it, but there was still infighting. And one of the things that you correctly mentioned, Rich, is that there was a gender divide, that the women kind of banded together. They had their own separate dinners. They had a nickname for themselves that was a little vulgar, so I'm not going to use it on air. But they kind of worked together to advance the interests of other women, sometimes to the detriment of men, and sometimes it alienated the men who lashed back in their own ways as well.
The book is called Fight House, Rivalries in the White House from Truman to Trump. Tevi Troy is the author, and he joins me here today on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Are there some presidents who love the fact that their staff battles it out? I mean, you always hear that President Trump likes to have people pit their ideas against each other and kind of see who's the last man standing. Did other presidents want it to be nice and calm and try to create that atmosphere? Did that work?
Yeah, so I think presidents want to have some kind of creative tension, some willingness to debate ideas and discuss them, and you know, let the president be what George W. Bush called the decider. But what they don't want is dysfunction. If the fighting gets so bad that it's out of hand, that nobody trusts each other, that everybody's leaking to the press so you can't have a private conversation, that's when it falls into dysfunction. On the other hand, if everybody gets along too well and there's no discussion or beta testing of ideas, then you can have groupthink. And that's what we had in the Vietnam era. Lyndon Johnson did not want any disagreement within the White House on this question of what they were doing in Vietnam. And he would push out people who were against him on the Vietnam issue, and we ended up not getting great results there. And there were a couple of State Department aides who wanted to present a different perspective on the war, but they were so scared that they didn't even call themselves a group. They called themselves the non-group, and they had secret meetings so that Johnson wouldn't find out that there were people actually working dissent on the war.
What I found remarkable in reading the book was that really the Nixon administration, discord with the Nixon administration within, amongst, is really kind of what led to Watergate happening. Is that a fair assessment?
There was definitely some Watergate-related origins in the discord. There was a lot of paranoia. Henry Kissinger was being tapped by the Defense Department. Kissinger would freak out when William Rogers, who was the Secretary of State, and his nemesis would have private dinners with Nixon. He wanted to know what was going on in there. So, yeah, there was a lot of there's a lot of dissent that led to wanting to find out more about what people were saying, where people were saying it. And that kind of dissent and distrust and paranoia did lead to Nixon wanting to find out more and eventually the Watergate break-in.
And the plumbers unit, right? The creation of the plumbers,
yep,
as they were called.
Right.
I'm amazed.
Yeah, the plumbers were designed to stop leaks. That's why they're called plumbers.
You know, I love, Tevi Troy, the idea of the White House chief of staff, right? I mean, it's something you think about, you want to be. My question for you is, how did that role emerge here? And is that kind of always the number one target for all the other people that work for the president?
Yeah, it's a great point, Rich, because in the book, in Fight House, I talk a lot about this role of the chief of staff. You know, it didn't always exist, and it didn't exist consistently, even once you had the first chief of staff, which maybe you'd say was under Eisenhower, but then it goes away in subsequent administrations. Kennedy doesn't have a chief of staff. Johnson has someone who's sort of chief of staff, but doesn't have the title. And then Nixon has it. And then there's reactions against Nixon. So Ford wants to call it staff coordinator. Jimmy Carter famously doesn't want to have a chief of staff at all because Nixon had one. So the chief of staff is a target in a couple of ways. One, in that the role itself seems like almost an imperial role. And then the second thing is that people who want to advance in the White House often have to get past or through the chief of staff. So that person does become a target.
I mean, you are working in the most powerful, most important place in the entire world. And obviously the proximity to the president, how much the president likes you. That's why I guess the old saying, and you've said this before, it's not the size of your office, it's the proximity to the Oval, right?
That's also, you know, I actually call it in the book the rule of propinquity, the rule of closeness. How close you are to the White House, to the president, can determine your power. And the Secretary of State, who's over in Foggy Bottom, thinks he should be the number one foreign policy advisor. But the truth is the National Security Advisor is just steps away from the Oval Office, and that often leads to that tension. We saw it in multiple administrations. I already mentioned Nixon administration, Rogers versus Kissinger, but also in the Carter administration, Big Brzezinski versus Cyrus Vance, who was the Secretary of State. They were at each other's throats from day one, even though they had a good working relationship before the administration ever started.
I'm so excited to finish reading this, but last question, Tevi, before I let you go. What is it like, the dynamic between the people that work in the Eisenhower Executive Office building and the actual White House, the West Wing itself? And what is that rivalry like?
It's a great question, because if you work in the West Wing, and I've worked both in the Eisenhower and the West Wing, if you work in the West Wing, you kind of have a little bit of a swagger. You feel like, oh, well, I'm in the West Wing and you're just an Eisenhower. And even if you're a good person, you try not to make it a big deal. The other people will look at you and say, wow, well, you're in the West Wing. You've got that advantage over me. But sometimes it's used in the rivalry. So in the Nixon administration, the Nixon people toward the end of the administration, when the Ford people were about to take over, the Nixon people wouldn't give them White House badges that would let them access the West Wing. So they were stuck outside in the Eisenhower building, even though they were aides to Ford, who was the incoming president.
I love it. White House rivalries in the White House, from Truman to Trump. It's on sale today. Get it everywhere books are sold. Tevi Troy, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.